From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. A day after a national election that in some states included ballot measures on abortion, the U.S. Supreme Court took up that debate again. This morning, the justices heard 2 hours of arguments on the constitutionality of the federal ban on so-called partial birth abortions. NPR's Nina Totenberg reports.
6 years ago, a closely divided Supreme Court invalidated a Nebraska law banning so-called partial birth abortions. The court said, among other things, that because the law contained no exception to preserve the health of a mother, it was an undue burden on a woman's right to choose. The U.S. Congress then legislated another ban, with official findings that the procedure is never medically necessary. But 6 lower courts struck down the law after concluding that those findings were contrary to a substantial body of medical opinion. Today, the issue was back before the Supreme Court. This time, though, the justice who cast the deciding 5th vote 6 years ago, Sandra Day O'Connor, was gone, replaced by a far more conservative Justice Samuel Alito.
They are now claiming that every time a doctor does a second trimester abortion...
On the steps of the court today, there was speechifying, singing, and chanting, while inside the ornate courtroom, the arguments proceeded in intense but quiet tones. About 40 minutes into the 2-hour argument, the back and forth between lawyer Patricia Smith and the justices was suddenly interrupted.
There were simply not that
many. Oh, my God! Yes!
In the hallway outside the courtroom, 5 policemen struggled mightily to subdue the man, identified as Rives Miller Grogan from Los Angeles. But for nearly a minute, his screams echoed in the background as lawyer Smith moved on with her argument. The procedure that abortion opponents call partial birth is done almost always in the second trimester of pregnancy, when the fetus is not yet viable, and most are done this late because of the mother's serious health conditions or grave fetal anomalies. 95% of second trimester procedures are DNEs, meaning dilation and evacuation. In most DNEs, the fetus is dismembered or comes apart while in the uterus. But one form of DNE occurs when the fetus emerges from the womb intact, with the head remaining inside the uterus. And because the head is too big to come out on its own, the doctor compresses it, killing the fetus. That procedure is known as an intact DNE, or a DNX, the procedure abortion opponents call partial birth. At today's arguments, all eyes focused on 2 justices. Samuel Alito, hearing his first abortion argument, asked no questions at all. Justice Anthony Kennedy, who dissented strongly from the court's partial birth decision 6 years ago, is widely considered the swing vote in this case, and he quickly focused on the necessity of a DNX.
Do you have any idea in how many of those instances is there a serious health risk to the mother that requires the procedure, as opposed to simply being an elective procedure?
If what Your Honor...
Are there any statistics on that?
No. In terms of the underlying medical conditions, there really aren't, Your Honor. And it varies dramatically according to the practice of the physician. If a physician is in a high-risk OBGYN practice, he or she is much more likely to encounter patients with serious underlying medical conditions.
A DNX procedure would be safer for some of these high-risk women, Smith said, because having the fetus come out intact would, among other things, reduce the danger that surgical instruments would cause hemorrhaging. Chief Justice Roberts seemed skeptical of the argument, since Smith had no hard and fast statistics to support her case. Just how much safer does a DNX have to be, he asked. After all, if the complication rate with a regular DNE procedure is 10% versus a 9.99% complication rate for the DNX, is that enough to override the government's articulated interest in life?
The testimony from at least 11 board-certified OBGYNs from the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists is that the reduction in risk is significant and that it reduces the risk of serious complications such as uterine perforation, which can lead to hysterectomy.
Roberts suggested, however, that banning this procedure wouldn't affect most abortions.
Do you agree with the discussion earlier that this act is not going to prevent abortions?
No, not at all, Your Honor. The evidence clearly shows that this is a very broad law that applies to DNE abortions.
Smith contended that since all doctors doing regular DNE abortions seek to make as few passes into the uterus as possible with surgical instruments, a DNE often becomes a DNX when the fetus emerges intact beyond the navel and the abortion then becomes a banned procedure. Thus, she argued the federal ban on so-called partial birth abortion would end up as a threat to all second trimester abortions. Solicitor General Paul Clement, defending the ban, countered that the D&E is what he called the gold standard of abortions and would not be banned under the Act. But Justice Kennedy seemed troubled.
Well, that's important for me because you seem to think that there's a standard D&E. In reading the medical testimony, it seemed to me that D&Es often result in intact deliveries quite without the intent of the doctor.
The D&X procedure was banned, said Clement, after Congress held four hearings over the course of 8 years and concluded it was not medically necessary. Justice Ginsburg asked whether Congress could not then follow the same procedure to outlaw D&Es. No, said Clement, because D&Es are the primary method of abortion.
Here, though, Congress didn't go after the dog, so to speak. It went after the tail.
Even though we're told by some of the medical briefs that the procedures are basically the same. They start out in the same way, and that the differences are not large in particular cases.
I think there is one very important difference between these two procedures that led Congress to ban one and allow the other to stand, and that is whether fetal demise takes place in utero, which is, of course, the hallmark of all abortions, or whether fetal demise, the lethal act, takes place when the fetus is more than halfway out of the mother.
Justice Stevens interrupted to observe that some of the congressional findings in the law were demonstrably untrue.
General Clement, are not some of the findings by Congress clearly erroneous? For example, there is a statement that no current medical schools provide instruction in the procedure. Now, that's clearly wrong, isn't it?
Clement dodged and weaved for a while and finally said that the court could override at least that one finding. Justice Stevens pressed on.
There's no doubt there will be a lethal act.
That's very important. I agree with
the
you.
The only issue is when it may be performed.
Well, the issue is whether...
Correct?
Yes, but the issue is very important because it's the issue as to whether it's going to be performed in utero or when the child is more than halfway outside of the womb. And that, of course, corresponds...
The fetus is more than halfway out.
I'm sorry?
Whether the fetus is more than halfway out. And some of these fetuses, I understand, in the procedure, are only 4 or 5 inches long. They're very different from fully formed babies.
Justice Stevens, again, I mean, you're right.
When it's halfway out, I guess you could call it either a child or a fetus. It's sort of half and half, isn't it?
That was Justice Antonin Scalia, who asked whether it would be infanticide to deliver the fetus and simply let it die.
I think in the pre-viability context, if you have a complete delivery, but, you know, the child isn't going to survive, I don't think it would be infanticide to necessarily let the child expire. But I do think, by contrast, if somebody tried to... With the fetus, you know, perfectly alive and in the hours that it might have to live, if somebody came in and ripped its head open, I think we'd call that murder. And, in
General
fact, Congress passed another statute to make that
clear. That's not what this case is about, because I think that you have recognized quite appropriately that we're not talking about whether any fetus will be preserved by this legislation. The only question that you're raising is whether Congress can ban a certain method of performing an abortion.
Clement replied that Congress was justified in drawing the line at abortions outside the womb as opposed to inside. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
You can find a timeline of developments in the history of so-called partial birth abortion and answers to frequently asked questions about the procedure at npr.org.